This is Digital Story Podcast number 846, June 7th, 2022. Today's theme is, it's official, Capture One Pro for the iPad in June. I'm Derek Story. Capture One users and those thinking about migrating to the robust photo management app finally get the news they have been waiting for. The iPad version will be released this month. Our lead story will look at what's included and what isn't, plus a few top-of-mind thoughts on the new MacBook Pro 13-inch M2, and much more. I hope you enjoy the show. No wine will be released before its time. And such is the case with Capture One Pro software as well. But finally, they are confident enough in the iPad version to share it with the world. Yay! And they really needed to do this. They knew they needed to do this. One of the things, anyway, that Lightroom has going for it is that Adobe has done a good job of integrating their desktop experience with that connected to the cloud, such as mobile devices, your iPhones, your Android smartphones, your iPads, and such. And Capture One Pro needed to do that. It was literally landlocked on your desktop computer, maybe with a few hard drives connected to it. Yay, that's fun. That works great. I've been using it. I'm a fan. So, you know, it is what it is. But it needed to move forward. It needed to have at least a big toe in the cloud if it's going to go anywhere, if it's going to compete with Adobe and Lightroom. And that's exactly what they've done. So now this is a version one of the software. It's going to be released on June 28th. June 28th is going to be released. We have an official date from Capture One Pro, okay? From their Instagram feed, they actually told us when. Now, it's going to cost $4.99 a month. So it's a subscription. So that is a fee on top of whatever you're paying for the desktop app. Like Capture One Pro for the desktop, this is not cheap, right? You have to pony up to use it. But it will be available through the App Store, which I like. I like getting my apps through the App Store. The updates are handled automatically. The billing's consistent with other things that I'm being billed for, and on and on and on. Now, I'm going to get it. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to get it. The way that I'm working my subscriptions these days is that if I add something on, something has to go away because I'm tapped out. I can't afford any more subscriptions. And when you really stop and look at everything, $2.99 here, $1.99 there, $4.99 there, $6.99 there. Netflix is what, $13.99 or $16.99 there? You know, that stuff adds up to some serious money. So I am going to find something that can go away so that I can afford this $4.99 a month because, quite frankly, I want it. Now, Capture One Pro has been very clear about saying that this is version one and that there's more to come, right? This isn't the final version. They just had to get it out the door. Now, for them, just getting it out the door is pretty much like a fully baked cake, maybe no frosting, as opposed to some other software that we've seen where it's still batter, right, as it goes out the door. So this is a pretty good release. So let's start out by what's going to be in this version one. We'll talk about a few things that are coming, and then we'll take it from there. So I've got, a few bullet points here of things that will be in this version. You can import, now this is using an iPad, you can import from the camera roll, from files, or from a plugged-in camera or SD card. And you can create albums, and you can sort and filter. All right, so the whole import process is there. What we don't know is how much information can you add to the import? One of the things that I really like about the desktop version is that I can add metadata on import, and I find that really helpful. We will see how much you get to add. We need to see what that import dialog box looks like. The next thing that you have is that you can cull your images, which is super handy. I mean, that's one of the things that mobile devices are good for. You know, you're out on a shoot, you have a long drive back, you're the passenger, or you're on a plane, or you're on a bus, something like that. And you want to start sorting your images. So you can have star ratings and color tags with V1 of the iPad version. So that's super helpful. Now, all of this will coordinate with the desktop version. Okay, so it's not just on the iPad version. And in fact, they make it very clear that the iPad app is a companion to the desktop version, not instead of it. Not instead of it. You still need or still want the desktop version. This is a companion to it. So in order for it to be a true companion, it has to communicate, which it will. You have quick editing with styles and presets, and you can create styles and presets, and you can import styles and presets. So, and I think that's going to be very handy on the iPad version. Now, I'm going to tell you the regular editing tools that you have, but the fact that we can use styles and presets just to kind of get our photo to, let's say, a shareable moment, right, for Instagram or for Facebook or for something like that, I think is really nice with just, you know, basically it's going to be one-tap editing. You can crop and rotate, which we would expect. Now, let's get into the editing tools themselves. You'll have white balance. You'll have exposure, contrast, brightness, and saturation. You'll have dynamic range, highlights, shadows, whites, and blacks, clarity and structure. You'll have dehaze, which is really cool, and both the auto and manual versions of dehaze. You'll have a basic color editor with a color picker. So you'll have HSL, black and white conversion. You'll have vignetting. You'll have sharpening, amount, radius, threshold, and halo. Noise reduction, film grain, Moiré, and histogram. So those are the basic editing tools that we get to start out with. Combine those with the styles and presets, and you can do a lot of stuff. You can do a lot of stuff on the iPad version. In terms of controls, you have before and after, undo, redo, reset, basic metadata. You can display basic metadata. So we have to see what that is, because honestly, their existing metadata on the desktop version is somewhat basic as already, right? So I don't know if it's like that or if it's even more basic than the basic metadata that we're already looking at. Now, you do have copy and apply for select adjustments. We need to see what those selective adjustments are, but copy and apply, very big deal to have in V1. Especially on an iPad, right? So you get one image in a series the way that you want, then you can copy and apply those edits to subsequent images that are shot under the same conditions. Yay, we love that. Now, finally, when we get into what you can do with these images, you can add an album to the cloud to be imported in the Pro Desktop version, right? So you create an album, and then that can go to the desktop version. You can export JPEGs, and you do have predefined recipes for that. You can export EIPs. There is watermark. Now, it's text-only watermark, but you do have watermarks. You can share to any relevant app, including cloud storage ones, or you can save to files. So that's nice. Good stuff again. That way, you know, even if you don't plan on going to the Pro desktop version, you want to go into Photos or something else, you can do all of that good stuff. And there's AirDrop. There's going to be AirDrop available. So that's a lot of stuff that we have to work with in V1. And we can see why it took them a little while to bake this cake. Now, there are some upcoming features that they want to let us know about. So tethering is an upcoming feature, masks and layers, upcoming. And then they're going to do cloud improvements for file transfer and ultimately synchronization. So, you know, so it feels like in the beginning that the cloud sync might be a little kludgy, but they're promising that that's going to get smoothed out in upcoming versions. So now when we talk about understanding their approach for the iPad app, here's what they have to say, and this is from their blog post that kind of spells it all out. I'm just going to read you a couple paragraphs here. Let them speak to what their intentions are. What are your intentions, young man? Right? All right, here we go. Capture One iPad app is not intended to be a replacement for the desktop app, but instead its best companion. Even though the iPad app works perfectly well on its own, it is built to be part of an ecosystem where you can work smoothly across devices to get the most out of your time, money, and images. With the Capture One iPad app, you can plug in your camera directly to your iPad, import hundreds of photos, organize them, and get to culling. See your images in all their glory on the iPad screen, quickly swipe through them, and rate or color tag them. Filter your best ones and start editing using either styles or manual adjustments. And I think the styles are really going to lean heavy on the styles here. I'd like to know if the styles that we have purchased for the desktop app will be transferable to the iPad app. That would be really cool if they were, because I have a bunch of them. And I would like to use them on the iPad. All right, finally, last paragraph from them here. Once you are done editing, you can show your images directly on the screen to team members and clients when together on location or by exporting them as JPEGs. If you would like to refine your images even further when you get home, upload your album to the cloud, import it into Capture One Pro on desktop, and continue working exactly where you left off. So when they phrase it that way, it sounds like it's going to be a two-step process in the beginning where you sort of export out of Capture One. It's probably some sort of Capture One file, right? So that the edits and such are embedded in it. And then you import into your desktop app from some sort of cloud location. That's going to be really interesting to see how that works. But the bottom line is we're going to have something to start with. We know that it's going to get even better. And if this version lives up to what they're talking about here and runs well, I'm super excited because this is another step toward, do I really need my desktop on that Maui vacation or not? Right? If I can play with my files and Capture One on the iPad, that's going to be really sweet. One thing that I looked into, and I could not find any information on this, is it going to work on what iPads, right? I mean, how new does your iPad have to be for this to run on it? For instance, I have an iPad mini that I just love. It's what? iPad mini 4, I believe. So it's relatively new. It's a couple years old now, but it was just updated, I mean, just recently. So it's the second most current iPad mini. Will it run on that? Because I want it to run on that. And I feel like that there's enough screen real estate to do Capture One Pro work on it. By the way, they have redesigned the UI. So they didn't just take the desktop version of the app and then dump it onto your iPad. It is a redesigned UI. It should, and I looked at it and it should be fine. Should be fine. So my fingers are crossed in a couple areas, and one of them is that it will run on my mini. I don't want to have to buy a new iPad to use this. That would kind of bum me out a little bit. So still questions to be answered, but we won't have to wait too long June 28th will be here before we know it, only 3 weeks to go from the time I'm recording this podcast. I'm excited about this. I'm looking forward to it. And we will be talking about it more once I have it in my hot little mitts. I have a quick workshops update. The Eastern Sierra workshop has now sold out, and that's the one in September. Congratulations to everyone who nabbed a seat for that, because it is going to be a fantastic event. And we're going to get cooking on it. We're going to get online access set up soon and just start preparing for that. So that is now sold out. So all we have left in the 2022 workshop season are 3 seats for the Oregon Coast Photography Workshop. I have 3 of those available. And I will probably be announcing the 2023 workshop season, I'm guessing in October for the next year. And it will be a combination of online and physical workshops. The online workshops, that were basically created during the pandemic, we're going to keep going with those because they're fun. I'm going to introduce some new topics in 2023, and we will probably revisit 1 or 2 of our most popular workshops from 2021 and 2022. But we'll have new topics in 2023 for online, and we will have some new locations for the physical workshops in 2023 as well. So this is going to be a lot of fun, but we have 1 physical workshop left for 2022, the Oregon Coast. If you're interested in it, and it is going to be fantastic, I can tell you right now, then all you have to do is click on the workshops button. That's in the nav bar on all the pages of the Digital Story, or go to thenimblephotographer.com. Click on workshops there. You can read all about it and reserve your spot. What the heck was Apple thinking with the new 13-inch MacBook Pro? There was an Apple event today, which is always nice when they have it on Monday instead of Tuesday, because I can talk about it. And I was super excited because I am still working with all Intel Macs. And then I go to these workshops, you know, like the Humboldt workshop, and half the people there have M1s, and they're just cooking. I mean, they're just cooking. It is a hot knife through butter. And I'm going, And their battery's lasting like 3 times longer. So I have a serious M1, M2, envy. And I thought, okay, I'm this far into it. I'm just going to wait for the M2s since, you know, the M1s have been out for a bit. And then I'll get my laptop and hopefully I can milk another 8 years out of it like I like to do, right? I was thinking, okay, there's going to be some M2 announcements today, Monday. And there were. They did the MacBook Air M2. And they did the MacBook Pro 13-inch M2. But I'm super disappointed with the MacBook Pro 13-inch M2. Let's start out with the good news, which what is included in this laptop. 13.3-inch Retina display, an Apple M2 chip, up to 24 gigabytes of memory, and the memory has been updated. Up to 2 terabytes of SSD storage. That's fantastic. I love that. I don't know if I could afford it, but I love it. Up to 20 hours of battery life. They kept the touch bar. They kept the touch bar, which surprises me. And they have Touch ID, which I do like. They have 2 Thunderbolt/USB ports. 2 of them. 1 headphone/mic jack. And the starting price for the basic model is $1,299, and it will be available in July. This is released the same time as the MacBook Air, which has almost identical specs as the MacBook Pro. There is a Pro in there as the MacBook Pro. The MacBook Air is $100 less. Its basic model starts at $1,199, which is still nothing to sneeze at. Those of you that buy Windows laptops are going, that's the basic price, right? Okay, the new MacBook Air that's cheaper has essentially the same specs, M2 chip, memory, storage, all that stuff, okay? It includes a slightly bigger screen than the Pro. Not much, but it's like, you know, 13.5 or something like that than the 13.3 that's in the Pro. And they brought back the MagSafe power port in addition to the two Thunderbolt USB ports. So on that model, on the Air, the cheaper model, you're not using up one port for charging. So you have the MagSafe port, and then you still have your two USB ports. That's clearly a better situation. The Air doesn't have the touch bar. Boo-hoo, no one cares, right? Okay, I'm sure somebody cares, but most of us don't care. And it gets 18 hours of battery life compared to 20 hours on the MacBook Pro. So my question is, and you can probably guess what my question is, what is pro about the 13-inch MacBook Pro? It only has two Thunderbolt ports, one which has to be used for charging since there's no MagSafe, has no SD card slot, it has no other ports, right, other than the headphone jack, which you have to have, and it has basically the same specs as the Air. So there doesn't seem to be anything pro about it. Bottom line for me, I'm going to have to pass on this. I want a 13-inch model. I like them. They work great for me on the road. They fit into all sorts of stuff. I have sleeves and such for them. I love them. I love the 13-inch form factor, but I'm just going to have to wait because for the starting price of $1,300, and believe me, I'm not going to get a MacBook Pro with 256 gigabytes of storage, right? I'm going to get at least 1 terabyte. So my price is probably going to be closer to $2,000. I'm not going to spend $2,000 for a Pro laptop that has two USB ports and nothing else. And I kept hearing that they're going to bring back the SD card slot. And I thought it'd be on all the ones moving forward. I don't know. So I don't know what's going on here. I'm just going to wait and see. I guess I'm stuck with Intel a bit longer, which means people will be mocking me in the Eastern Sierra, and people will probably be mocking me in Oregon. I'm just going to have to gird my loins right now and be ready for that. Fujifilm announces the X-H2S high-end APS-C stills/video hybrid. This is from DP Review, and I have a link to the article in the show notes. Let me read you a bit about this new camera that happened while I was on the road. Fujifilm has announced the X-H2S, a high-end still/video APS-C mirrorless camera. It's built around a stabilized 26-megapixel stacked CMOS sensor that lets it shoot up to 40 frames per second with full AF. You can also shoot 4K video at up to 120p in a wide range of codecs. It uses a fast readout sensor and the new X Processor 5 chip to add subject recognition AF. That's humans, animals, trains, planes, motorbikes, cars, and birds. Sounds very OM system-like, and I'm glad to see it. And more sophisticated AF tracking, even with subject detection disengaged. This combines the ability to shoot up to 40 frames per second and a buffer that allows 184 JPEGs or 174 RAW files at the fastest rate and over 1,000 JPEGs or 400 RAW files at 15 frames per second using its mechanical shutter. On the video side of things, the X-H2S can capture DCI or UHD 4K up to 60p using the full width of its sensor to give footage sampled from 6.2K width. 4K and 120p can be output over HDMI over a RAW stream for encoding as ProRes RAW or BRAW using external recorders. So this little beauty will be available in early July, at a recommended price of $2,499, which seems like a pretty good price for a camera that can do all of this. So this is definitely a muscle camera from Fujifilm. It really does remind me a lot of the Fuji version of the OM-1 that's out from OM System. It has a lot of that same sort of feel, you know, that muscle that the OM-1 has, but it has it in a sensor that has a bit more resolution and a bit more girth. And if you shoot video, or if you're a hybrid photographer that shoots both stills and video, this looks like a pretty darn good camera, especially if you have any X-mount lenses. So I'm pretty happy about this release by them. By the way, it has more of the form factor of the, the S1, I believe, that looks more like a quote-unquote traditional mirrorless camera, which is so funny, traditional mirrorless camera. I mean, there's an oxymoron in there somewhere. But it doesn't have, you know, like all the dials and kind of that retro look of some of the other Fujifilm mirrorless. So it's a little bit more of a modern look. It's a camera, I think, for a different kind of photographer, a photographer that really has to capture a lot of top video work alongside stills. So for me, I still think the OM-1 is a little better choice, just because it does have a slight emphasis on stills. However, if you're like balanced in both areas, this looks like a darn good camera, especially for $2,499. Happy that Fujifilm has released this. And I'll be curious to hear how the feedback on it goes as people start to take it out into the field and start shooting with it. Stay tuned. Probably more to come on this one. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. It's funny, I've been having some conversations with listeners on our online workshop, because we have the infrared workshop going right now. And a number of them have mentioned that they were unsubscribed from the podcast if they're using the Apple Podcast app. And they go, oh, that's funny. There's no podcast on Tuesday morning when they normally expect it. And so they go, I wonder if there's something wrong with Derek or something like that. Here's the thing. Here's the thing I will tell you. That if the podcast isn't available when it normally is, my podcast, then check your app. because I, you know, I'm like clockwork on this thing, right? I'm like clock. Now, one way you can always double check is go to thedigitalstory.com, because I post the podcast on the site and you can listen to it. I post it with a player there as well. So if the podcast isn't showing up in your app, then probably check the site first. If it's there, then just see what's going on with your app. What the Apple users have been telling me, for some reason, some of them were unsubscribed. All they had to do was hit the subscribe button again, and they were back in business, and it's been running fine since. Just a note for you, that if the show isn't showing up when you think it should, it's probably the app. See what's going on and then go from there. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support our community month in and month out. And we have some new Inner Circle members. Since I started the Inner Circle group on Derek Story Online, it's kind of turbocharged our Inner Circle a bit, which I love. Not only for our existing members, but we're attracting new members, which I'm thrilled about. We have a new photo challenge for June on our Inner Circle site. It's primary colors. And the first few shots from the photo challenge have been a blast. This is going to be one. This is going to be an eye-popping photo challenge, I can tell right now. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. If you want to join this group, if you want to become a part of this community that just has such a big impact on our podcasts and everything else that we do, and by the way, gets discounts on every workshop that we offer, plus has access to the elite group, the select group on Derek Story Online, all you have to do is sign up on our Patreon site, There's a tile on every page of the digital story. Click on that tile, take a look around, and hopefully you will join us in 2022. And a big thanks to our existing Inner Circle members. And finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper, our longest running sponsor of the digital story. I have some printing to do. My queue is backing up. I didn't set up the printer last week. I was hoping to because I was gone on a family event in Southern California. I was gone for 5 days, which put a little crimp in my workflow, but I'm back here now. I'm hoping to get it set up this week because I want to do some printing. I've got some paper just waiting to run through that printer. I've got plenty of ink, and I'm looking to Red River Paper to make me look like I'm a better photographer than I really am. If you're interested in outputting some of your images onto prints, sharing them with other people, fine art greeting cards, all sorts of goodies that you can do with your images, then click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, the Red River Paper tile. Take a look around. Get some different surfaces, right? Get some stuff to play with. They also have a sampler pack, which is a lot of fun if you're just getting to know. Or you can research. They'll tell you, are you shooting portraits or landscape or whatever, black and white? They'll recommend papers for you. They will make it easy to get the right paper for what you want to do. Also, they have a terrific Facebook page where you can post questions and stuff there. That's at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Either way, get your printing act on. Let Red River Paper make you look great. And thank you so much, Red River Paper, for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, working on some great stuff for next week. Until then, stay safe, be creative, keep taking pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.